Welcome. Jump into the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast, where leading with love isn't just nice, it's genius. I'm Laurel Donnellan.
And I'm Daryl Brown. We'll unpack business strategies infused with empathy and action, driving both profit and purpose. Our world is ever-changing, so discover how the savvy leader wears compassion as their power suit.
Hello, lovely listeners. Welcome to a special series on the Compassionate Leaders Circle podcast. I'm Laurel Donnellan here with my dear friend and co-host, Daryl Brown. Join us as we dive deep into our personal journeys, sharing stories from different stages of our lives. In each episode, we'll interview one another about a chapter, starting with how we grew up and ending with where we are now. We will be discussing our history and the lessons that shaped our lives and approach to leadership. So my dad has been suffering a lot over the last 2 weeks.
Yes.
And he's starting to die. And I feel relief. Like, he's been in so much pain. So I've been, you know, as you can imagine, I've been up and down. But I'll tell you, when my sister passed away, I had to meet with my mom and dad and a nurse to do a DNR on Zoom. So I was with my sister in Austin, and the nurse was there, and I was on Zoom with my parents. And my dad was like, of course, losing a kid is like the worst thing. And he was really beside himself. And he's like, what could I do? What could I do? And I said, Dad, Mom, when it's your time, please go fast. And he said, I could do that. So I've been talking to him and saying, go fast, Daddy, go fast. So 2 days ago, they said he was going to live for months. And it was really upsetting because it would have been a horrible end of life for him. And today they think it's going to be hours or days, and it's going to be less suffering. And he's been ready to go for a long time. So that's our story with Gene.
So you feel relief.
I feel like he's going to be with my mom, and I feel relief, and I feel like he's going to, you know, with humans, there's a lot of suffering at the end of life. Like, we haven't really figured out how to relieve the pain and the suffering. And so the faster he goes, the better it is.
Yeah. For the individual who's leaving.
Yeah.
Who's leaving his body.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So
you know, the nice part about that is that his spirit isn't, you know, doesn't have to go through all of that.
Yeah. And I think he's very much in between worlds. I mean, I do believe there's an afterlife. And last night he thought my sister was my mom, and my mom is in the next life. So it's just kind of a happy relief. And the other thing that I love is that he did not want to be in a nursing home.
Right.
He's 96. And 2 weeks ago, he was making his own meals and taking care of himself and living on his own. And he never wanted to be in a nursing home. And he never will have to be. So that's pretty great.
Yeah, very good.
And I also think, like, going through this with my sister and my mom has prepared me for for this time. You know, I feel so different. I mean, I'm grieving and I'm sad and I'm up and down, and I feel the physical grief. 2 days ago, I was like so pain. I literally, my body hurt from it. But having that experience is like, you know, you're going to get through it. And
right.
I think having such deep grief with my sister and kind of feeling lost for a couple of years after that, I had this sense that I really was never going to get through it. But we did, and we will. And
I think knowing that you're not alone.
Yeah, I have such amazing friends, including you, and amazing siblings. Yeah, it's and my, you know, Mark and Patrick next door, and I have a big community and lots of hugs in my future.
And
including I called your sons on Sunday, and my nieces and nephews are all very precious to me, but I was able to tell them about my dad, and they were so lovely. You've raised some very nice human beings. You and Jean Ann should be very proud.
And we are. And you're a big part of that.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah. So, Laurel Donnellan, as we talk about different stages of life and how we approach them, and we're at your in your life, you've now entered into the corporate world, and we've talked about that, and you're on to bigger and other things. I'm not going to say better, because that's up to you to say, right? So tell me about this journey.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this conversation because it's a long journey. I've had my own company for 25 years, and for as long as I worked as, you know, for other people, I've been an entrepreneur. And it really starts with, I've always wanted to have my own business. I really didn't know how to. Like, my dad worked for IBM, which is not a small business. So I always wanted to have my own business. I imagine, because of my love for food and hospitality, it would be my own restaurant someday. But my last chapter in the corporate world, and my chapter in sobriety, getting sober, really brought me to this other place of fascination about psychology and change, and how do you help people make positive change. So that's how it started. I was at Medallion Hotels. I knew that we were going to sell the company, and I started thinking about, if I could have any company and do anything, what would it be?
So tell me about the important factors. I was impressed that you said that you worked in the corporate world for as long as you've had your own company, right? And as we know, most small companies, especially, run mom and pop stores, right? Don't make it, right? A lot of people have had that idea, but what do you think, from your background, were the most motivating factors that brought you here today, mm-hmm. or especially that kept you alive in the beginning, because that's when most small companies go under?
Love that question so much. I think number one is stubbornness. My parents named me Laurel, and my mother reminded me through my whole life that Laurel meant accomplishment. And I've always been vision driven and goal driven, and I like getting things checked off my list. And so I shared this vision of having this company that helped people, and help people find their calling and their dreams. And so I felt a deep sense of purpose, but also stubbornness about sticking with that plan. I also felt spiritually led, and even when things looked dicey, or people would say that my ideas were stupid or crazy, I kind of just went back to God and my relationship with spirit, and found that thread of hope in there that kept me going. And then I just had people like you and your wife, Jean Ann, and other people that supported me along the way. And I think it's important to have a vision tribe. So on days where you think you're going to give up, other people hold your ideas up for you and hold you up.
So you mentioned Jean Ann and myself, but and thank you for that. But there are other people who believed in you, and that is a sign of leadership, right? They had faith in you that you were going to succeed. You call it stubbornness. I think that there's more to it than that. So could you say more than that?
I think I'm really good. I've always been good, even as a young leader, communicating a vision and believing it. So communicating something that's not tangible yet in a way that is real. And I think that's really important. I think that people get excited about ideas that have a deep sense of purpose. And I think I've been able to communicate throughout the many stages of Compassionate Leader Circle what our purpose is and what the vision is. And that resonates with people's hearts and they want to get on board and help.
So that, and that helps you look for those who have that type of or who run the types of companies with those qualities.
Yeah.
So we talked about Chuck Feeney. Who else in your past propelled you, you know, who you can go back and say, thank you for that. Tell me who and what that was.
I love this question because I'm reaching out to him and I hope to see him in a few weeks. So when I was in college, I worked for two guys named Zach Neumeier and Walter Eisenberg. And they, in college, in undergrad, came up with this idea that they were going to create a management company. And they did. They started it right out of college. And they've been super successful. They're one of the largest hospitality management companies in the country. Their company is called Sage. They chose that name because they were only 22 and they wanted to sound wise, which I love so much, when they started the company. And all these years later, it's still an entity and they're still running it. So I thank them for that modeling, but I also worked for them in school. I think I told the story of being a pastry chef, and they gave me a lot of, they hired me as a pastry chef. Again, I didn't have any commercial pastry chef experience, but I could sell them on my vision of what the desserts would look like. And they gave me a shot, and they also really, they did a lot of praising of the work. You know, we just had a good time. So they gave me modeling for having vision, going after their dreams, having fun at work. And I'm excited to tell them this story because I haven't been in touch with them that often. And they invited me to the anniversary of their business opening. I wasn't able to go, but I hope to see them in a few weeks in Denver.
Mm-hmm. Who else?
Fred Eyt was the president of Medallion Hotels, and he hired me as his VP of Human Resources, even though I didn't have any human resource experience because...
Hold on here. Hold on. Time out. So why is it that these people are giving you awesome responsibility when you haven't done anything to prove that you would be successful?
I think this is really good. This is a good question. I have an incredible imagination and I can see things very clearly, even if I have never done them before. And I can explain how they're going to work. So I could, you know, I did around the pastry chef thing. I did research. I gave them a menu. I told them how it was going to happen. I mean, I did the work. I did the preparation. And in the case of Fred Eyt, I know that I was up against five very seasoned human resource managers that had lots of hospitality experience running human resources in a hotel company. And he asked me to put together a 3-year critical plan for what I would do if I had the opportunity to be his VP of HR. And I put it together, and I was really informed by my dad's experience at IBM, because it was a great company in many ways. And again, I just imagined what a very healthy culture could look like in a hotel company. I didn't have the internet. I don't think I went to the library. It just came from my imagination. And after looking at the critical plan that I typed up, so we didn't have PowerPoint or anything. kids, we typed things up and we handed them to our boss. And he hired me, and I said, you know, I'm so glad you hired me, because I spent about 40 hours on that critical plan. So I was wondering if you didn't hire me, what you would have thought if I gave you a bill for the 40 hours of consulting that I put into it. So I'm glad you hired me. So yeah, I have a really good imagination of what things could look like in the future.
Well, it doesn't sound like it's just imagination. Or it may be imagination, but then you were preparing yourself for success by doing the legwork. You know, the saying is, you know, we don't know what we don't know, right? So you weren't taking a chance on them hiring you because you were young and energetic and nice looking, right? You were going in there with being prepared, knowing something about their business, doing your homework, all of those things that anybody would want in anybody would be looking for, right? Right. So you must have had a certain amount of confidence walking in the door.
I had confidence, and I also listened very carefully to what he wanted, because in the interviewing process, I asked him what he wanted in the company. And he talked about, you know, it was his last hurrah. He was going to use this company to fund his grandchildren's education. And he wanted a company where employees would be very, very happy. So I listened to that and laid out the plan from that place.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay, so here you are. Now you have your own company. And you're building it around some of the things that you laid out for Medallion, right? For the human resources position. You mentioned happy. So talk a little bit about how you worked that into the steps of the Compassionate Leader Circle.
Yeah, so I've had mostly a very happy career. I mean, there were certainly ups and downs throughout my life, but I love to work, and I love the work I've been able to do in my life. And Compassionate Leader Circle started with a simple idea that ended up being pretty complicated, but I was wondering if I could help re-engineer people in a way so that they could have happy work. So at Medallion, we provided a place where people could be happy at work. And then I became really fascinated with, how do I help other people find their calling, find what they're meant to do for work? And can I do that and replicate that process outside of an organization? So that's where we started.
And you took that to what was the next step?
Well, I went back to graduate school and got a master's degree with that idea, thinking I could find another model for that out that existed based on research, but I couldn't really find a model. There's lots of studies at that point about career satisfaction and job satisfaction, but there wasn't a lot of research or models, learning models around calling, around, you know, finding yourself super happy with your pursuits at work.
Mm-hmm.
And so that led me to a 6-year journey to figure out my own learning model for that process that is now called the Donnellan Method that we use every day here at Compassionate Leader Circle.
And you talked about the psychology of it, right? So please explain that and how that also, how that kind of research, right?
Yeah, also, along the way, I continue to do research. I now have a partner, someone on our compassion team named Sarah Feely, who just graduated from a program from Northwestern on in organizational psychology. So she's bringing us new research. But at the time when I started out, I looked at things like appreciative inquiry. I had a lot of experience myself in therapy, so I learned from therapists. I went to a lot of retreats and read a lot of books about calling and finding your calling. I spent time with Dick Bowles, who wrote What Color Is Your Parachute? And then, you know, I created a model that has very specific principles and practices. And we actually do our own research on where is someone before the process and where is someone after. And we've developed our own validation for the process. The other thing that's really influenced me, like, you know, not from a quantitative standpoint, from a qualitative standpoint, is my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I saw in that experience 12 principles that people follow consistently over a long period of time, and miracles happen. And so the Donnellan Method is not the same practices and principles, but it's been informed by the faith that a human, in this case me, could come up with something that could help lots of people.
So the connection between the 12 steps and 12 principles, it can't be just a number.
No, I mean, there's a lot of things that inform the Donnellan Method. And I think, you know, it's funny, people that are Christians go through the program and think that I was informed by the Bible. People who are Buddhists go through our program and think I was informed by Buddhism. People that are Native American can see the Native American influences. I think the thing that all my spiritual experiences have informed the principles and practices, including AA.
So let's talk basics, because all of those religions, as well as the spiritual foundation of AA, there are certain basic tenets of each, right? So talk a little bit
about
it.
Not only in our Donnellan Method, which is about career development, but also in our leadership methods and compassionate leadership methods, one thing that is a common piece of all of them is that we explore the past. We help people be present, which is a spiritual practice. And we help people envision a future. So past, present, future is part of the methodology. And I learned that in AA and therapy, that if you don't deal with your past, you're gonna deal with it one way or another. it is, your past is present, whether you're aware of it or not. So whenever we work with people with career development or leadership development challenges, we acknowledge where they came from, who their parents were, what their past is, not unlike what you and I are doing in this podcast. And we talk about the present, and then we help them do that envisioning of their future. And one of the things I've realized over the years is I do that naturally, But for a lot of people, that's hard to do. But we can teach you to do that. It's not a talent that you have to have. It can be learned.
So there are certain elements of one's past that need to be identified, because people who are stumbling or in the wrong profession sometimes don't know how they got there and don't know how to get out, right? So when you talk about sitting down and what am I, what is my passion, what am I supposed to do? What am I here for? Right? I think what I hear you saying is you have to find out. You can't be blocked. You can't be challenged when you around every corner, right? And until you get rid of that, whatever those challenges are, it's hard to move forward and see your true self.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate you asked me like who my influences were at the beginning of this conversation. That's part of the conversation is who influenced you. I was really influenced deeply by a book called Hand-Me-Down Dreams that was written by a psychiatrist. And it was about how we're all influenced by our parents, whether we know it or not, in what we choose for work. So some of us want to please our parents and choose what they did, even if it's not the right path. Some of us want to rebel against our parents and choose something entirely different, even if it's not the right path. So yeah, I think
Anything but what they did.
yeah. So it's fascinating for me because I get to hear people's stories and we get to look at. And that's often one the principle is the principle is about learning from the past. And the principle is awareness and the practice is learning from the past. And so everyone that we work with goes through that exercise of looking at who influenced their career and what happened in the past and just getting clear about it. You know, and it's not a one and done. It's your whole life.
Well, I think that we continue, as we've learned in AA, you continue to grow. But in order to continue to grow, you have to continue to investigate, right? You have to continue to look inside, right? And I think that's what makes a good leader, right? A good leader continues to grow. It just doesn't, a good leader just doesn't stay stagnant, right?
I think
Because
especially now the world is moving too fast for leaders to stay stagnant. I think honestly, like 30 years ago, you could get away with it, but you can't get away with it. Like, I mean, maybe you can get away with it and not be an excellent leader, but I think even now, technology and globalization and AI and everything is moving so quickly, like I think the best leaders are just still learning and still open to, you know, adapting and learning.
yeah, I worked with two people who actually bought ABC. They called it the little mouse that took the big chunk of cheese. And but they what they talked about was building a moat around your business. And I don't think that works anymore. It just doesn't work. I remember distinctly. And because that's exactly how you get eaten, right? I mean, that's.
No, I think it needs to be more porous than the moat around
That's what it was back in the
Yeah.
in my
Yeah, I
early days.
think, you know, we're living in a time where 20 somethings can run big ventures, you know, because they have access to everything. It's a very exciting time and it's much different than when you and I started out.
Well, technology has changed everything, as you said before,
Yeah.
Right. So tell me about the business and tell me tell me about the missteps and tell me about the giant leaps.
Wow. I'm going to start with, I'm going to start with where we're at now, because I think that informs like where I've been, and where I'm at now and where our business is in is a very, very good place after 25 years. Most of our business is with universities and corporations right now, and creating sustainable, customized leadership and career development programs for them. And that's very exciting. You know, we're working with a big not-for-profit, a medium-sized global logistics company, two engineering firms, a university. So that's a very big and promising part of our business. And I love that. And I have team members that love that. I think what I'm most excited about is things that I haven't been successful with that I'm determined to be successful with in the future. So
there goes that stubbornness again.
So along the way, I did this with your son, so you probably remember I created a sort of side hustle called Kid Book Camp, and I helped 100 5 to 12 year olds create, publish their books on Amazon over time, and haven't in the past wasn't able to figure out how to make that sustainable. And in addition, did work with teenagers. That's very similar to what we do with adults, and every adult that I work with through our program we now call Purpose Lab or Lead Lab has said to me, I wish I had this when I was a teenager. So I have spent a lot of time. I just had to put a proposal together, and I've done work with you and lots of other people trying to figure out how to make what we call now Dream Books and Dream Lab for teens into a sustainable business. So in the past, I've spent a lot of my own money and a lot of my own time and lost money on those false starts. I mean, we can look at it as beta programs. We could put a nice spin on it, but they were very expensive and timely and time, not timely, but
time consuming.
Thank you. Endeavors. And today we are working with a school district in Oakland, California, to take all those ideas and make them into a sustainable, profitable business. We're also put a proposal out today for a school district in upstate New York. We have a partner in India that's an online education company that we're working with. And we have inroads with Kaplan to talk about taking our Dream Books and Dream Lab program to the masses. So for the first time in a long time, I can see both of those ideas as sustainable businesses that are both helping the world and profitable. But as an entrepreneur and looking back, I took a lot of risks with money and time that probably went a little overboard on the risk department. Currently we're having a great year, and we're figuring out how to take all that great experience with kid programs and teen programs and make them profitable. So that's exciting. I made a lot of missteps with the wrong people. I've had great experience with people. I've had hard experiences with people and business partners. I currently do not have formal business partners. I'm currently officially 100% owner of my company, of our company. I plan to share ownership in the future because I feel like for the first time, I have all the right people who are really dedicated to the vision and to me and to where we're headed. And so that feels fantastic. But in the past, I think the downside of being able to communicate a vision and purpose is sometimes you're able to do that with the wrong people and get people excited about where you're headed. And I think entrepreneurship can be very lonely. So I think I chose people when I was lonely. I remember thinking I'd lost my sister and 8 months later I lost my mom. And I formed a business partnership with someone. And I remember thinking, this is like getting married in grief. Like, it's not really a good idea and timing. And it wasn't. And fortunately, I was able to unwind that partnership. But I think having confidence in your ideas and in yourself consistently is very hard in life. And especially in a business that's so up and down and all around. So I would, if I have to give advice about entrepreneurship, I would say, someone told me once, like, just think about this, like in entrepreneurship, everything costs twice as much as you think it will and takes twice as long as you think it will. I would say in my case, it's probably 10 times as long and 10 times as costly as I thought things were going to be. And just to make it, take your time with people and contracts and making decisions about partnerships. And I would just say date someone before you get married.
Mm-hmm. Become friends before you become friends first.
Yes, I have a beautiful man who's my lawyer who's helped me along the way, and his message is in my ears all the time now. It's like, Laurel, just remember, it's harder to get out of a business partnership than it is to get out of a marriage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the old principles before personalities doesn't always work when it comes to trying to dissolve a business partnership.
No.
It would be nice if it did, but there are a lot of people who are unprincipled or are willing to see things only their way.
Yeah. And, and to be fair, it's also really hard to partner with someone who is persistent. We won't call it stubborn. and has a vision that is theirs, right? So in the end, I gestated and birthed this baby for 25 years, although I hope it's like a teenager now. It needs to grow. I need to help it grow. And it's very hard to come into that and really collaborate with that person. I think I'm more willing and more open, and I'm just learning really how to share decision-making and collaboration. We can ask my team about that for validation, but I think I'm learning that. And that's been I was able to do that very well when it wasn't my business. And it's been a very hard lesson to learn as an entrepreneur.
So let's step back for a moment, because what I see, I see a pattern. You put pieces of the puzzle, of your own puzzle, together well. But one of the things that we said about talking about preparation and doing homework, making sure that your vision and proving that your vision is successful, But as we started talking about your dad and your ability to feel joy, well, maybe not joy, but peace.
I'm definitely feeling joy today and peace.
Yeah, joy and peace in his moving on out of this life because of the experience that you've had, right? You seem settled with that, right? You seem very settled with that. And I think that has to do with the work that you've done, with the personal work that you've done. You know, I think that you're in the place that you're in, it seems to me, that because of the work that you've done, I think you're able to share now more with not having, not having to have such a tight grip on things, perhaps.
I want to say yes to all that, and I have a ways to go. You know, I think.
Thank heavens, Laurel. Thank heavens we have a ways to go.
I mean, honestly, I'm delighted with where I am in life and with work, and especially with my dad, because he is on his way to the next world, and we have never gotten along better than we have in the last year. And so that is a huge gift. And
let me ask you a question about, has your dad changed much?
He has. I mean, I know a lot of our work is our own work to do, but in this case, I mean, I remember like 6 months saying, "Dad, I know you're older. I know you're slower physically. I know mentally you're just as sharp as you ever have been, but I have to say you've never been nicer."
Mm.
And he said, "I've always been nice," and kind of laughed. I'm like, "No, you haven't." Just in the last year to 6 months, it's hard being 96 physically and all sorts of stuff, but he did things like apologize when he would get upset with me, like that's new behavior, and really, really appreciate the time that whenever I spend time with him, he's like, "I'm so glad you're here. You've really helped me." I've been a pretty good daughter my whole life. I haven't heard that appreciation until recently. So I know often people don't change, but my dad has changed, and I'm so glad. I think my personal work is just understanding how things like that are so precious and being really present for him and his and celebrating him. My dad and I did not have an easy relationship, and what a blessing that the best part of our relationship is now before he goes.
Yeah, I admire your ability to hang in there, right? And to continue to be present with him.
Thank you. I admire that too. And I think I learned that from Al-Anon and AA. And if it wasn't for Al-Anon and AA, I probably would not be in this position of being close to my father at the end of his life. So I'm very grateful for that wisdom from other people.
Right. I think it's, how can you compare that to where you are with your business partnerships and business relationships? Let's not call them partnerships.
we'll wait for my lawyer to. Well, I am going to be 65 in January, and I am also slowing down a bit, physically. And and I have an amazing team who wants to do more. And I think I need to let them participate in new ways and in more ways, and also just enjoy this time. Like, it's taken me 25 years to build this team. And like with my dad, understand that this time is precious. And, not unlike Joe Biden, I'm thinking about passing the torch to younger people because I'm not going to be able to work as hard as I have been. And there's lots of opportunities for my team to grow and take on more responsibility. And that can be super fun for me to help them do that.
So now you're working on your legacy.
I'm working on my legacy for sure.
Right. Because that, I mean, being in business for 25 years on your own, those you are, this is about legacy because you've surrounded yourself with people who want to be there.
Yeah.
And in order for them to continue to want to be there, you're going to have to let go,
Yeah.
right? And let them grow.
Yeah. And be patient because I think patience for leaders is really underrated. It's like, I think in a way we're kind of, we're meant to make decisions and, but yeah, I think being patient with myself and them is going to be important. And finding them up. I mean, the great thing about being an entrepreneur is I've get to do what I want to do. In the past, I've been able to like go in the directions even if they didn't make sense for other people. I now have to collaborate with di about direction and vision and future because I'm not going to be here. I'm building, I'm collaborating with them on a future that they're going to execute. So it's important that we build in their purpose and their visions and their creativity and
Because it's their baby, right? So to
right.
speak, with you giving some guidance as opposed to them doing what you think will be successful because of what comes out of your head.
And
And that
that's
takes a lot of trust, right?
it does.
So what do you want people to be able to say about that when they put you into the Entrepreneurs Hall of Fame? What are they going to say about Laurel Donald?
I hope they say that I was kind to myself and to my clients and to my team. And that I did things that were hard but important. And I stuck with things long enough to see them impact people in a good way.
I think that they'll sing that. They won't just say it. I think they'll
Oh,
sing.
well, they say singing is praying twice, so I like that. I like that we're gonna sing that.
Anything else that we've left out here?
No, I think that was so lovely being with you in this way, and thank you.
It's always such a joy. I have deep gratitude to be able to connect with you in this way.
Thank you. And that's a heart-wrapped episode of the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast. May your compass always point to kindness.
As you navigate the world, let compassion be your North Star. Join us next time as we continue to redefine success one heart-led decision at a time.
Lead wisely, lead with heart. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeadersCircle.com.